them, it's literally nothing.
I think it's a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. For us, it's a lot of money, right? So for American, this is the problem with oligarchy. It's the problem with huge wealth inequality. The math is staggering. We can't really grasp it, right? $1 million would be absolutely life-changing for 99.9% of Americans. But for these people, it's literally the equivalent for the median American family of $2. It means nothing to them. It's just symbolic. It's just symbolic obeisance to Trump. But I want to jump back to the LA Times and the Washington Post. There is a problem when the people who have the most money set the example of yielding to power first. It's a problem. They shouldn't do it. It is obeying in advance. It's textbook anticipatory obedience. It's absolutely 180 degrees, not what they should have done. That said, in the regime that's coming, not obeying in advance means that little people, little organizations, little groups, municipalities, judges, NGOs, we have to all not obey in advance. We can't take our lead from these people. It's not obeying in advance is always going to be tense because other people going to obey in advance, including powerful people. So we have to not behave the way the powerful are behaving.
Timothy Snyder, professor of history at Yale University, author of numerous books, including On Freedom and On Tyranny. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be.
Hey, everybody. Tune in Saturday, December 21st at 5 o'clock for Blues Junction. We're spreading some holiday cheer with singer-songwriter Mark Lemhaus. He's a blues man, and he's got some new music coming out here. I've invited him to come out and do a live performance and interview, and who knows, maybe he'll squeeze in a holiday tune. So again, that's Mark Lemhaus, Saturday, December 21st. You're invited.
Winter's now fading, and I won't have to stay.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland city councilors are sworn in.
The county's domicile unknown report shows a sharp increase in homeless deaths.
And in breaking national news, the U.S. House passes a budget.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 20th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland's new elected officials were sworn in at a ceremony at the Newmark Theater yesterday. The ceremony included performances from the Roosevelt High School Jazz Band and remarks from each new elected official. For the past few weeks, the 12 new city councilors have been participating in intensive onboarding sessions, often going late into the night to prepare for their new roles. KBOO caught up with a few of the councilors before the ceremony. District 2 Councilor Alana Pirtle-Guinea says, in the process, the councilors have been getting to know each other, and working together is critical, even if they won't always agree.
You know, one of my big takeaways from the last few weeks is that even though many of us will have different positions on the issues, you have a council full of people who are ready to hit the ground running, working together, working collaboratively, and with a lot of respect. And I'm excited to work with everybody.
District 1 Councilor Candace Avalos said getting representation for East Portland is important.
It means so much to me. As somebody who was on the Charter Commission, and we developed this big vision, and it was a bit, at the time, you know, it felt really big, and we didn't know if we could really make it happen. The fact that we did, and seeing the outcome of the first half of the Charter vision with the districts and the ranked choice voting, I feel really positively. I think it really has instilled a new sense of hope among Portlanders, because they truly are seeing their interests reflected in the people that are representing them. So I think that spirit is going to drive us into this next phase. ways, which is now implementing the new form of government, right? And how does our legislative branch look with our executive, and how do we ensure that the council has the powers that they were written into the charter and that they deserve? I feel very strongly about that. I'm excited.
Fellow District 1 Councillor Jamie Dunphy acknowledged that the council has to get busy quickly once the first meeting happens on January 2nd.
I want Portlanders to hold us accountable and to demand results. I don't think it's acceptable for us to sit back and spend the next 2 years twiddling our thumbs and saying that we're figuring out how these things work. We have to deliver. We have real serious challenges in our community. We have people dying on the streets every day. We have families who are feeling unsafe to be here because of things in the built environment, people being hit by cars, homelessness and addiction and mental health that is unchecked and untreated in ways that is just leading to enormous suffering in every part of our community. We don't have the luxury of taking 6 months to figure out where the bathrooms are. We have to start really showing people that this new system is going to work. People don't expect it to be fixed quickly, but they expect to see things moving right in the right direction. And I think we all appreciate that urgency because we're at a tipping point, and all the pieces are in place to really succeed. If we don't take advantage of that and act with urgency and competence, then yeah, we may fall on our faces. And I would hope that the average person listening will give us a little bit of grace, but not let us off the hook. Keep us, you know, keep the urgency on.
Angelita Murillo is a counselor from District 3, Southeast Portland. She says it's important for the new council to take their time and be deliberate.
I think that, you know, with a ranked choice voting system, people were very skeptical, the media was very skeptical of it, and then just a few weeks ago it turned out that the process worked, that Portlanders were mostly informed about how to vote in the new system. And I think that's going to be the same thing moving forward, is there's going to be a lot of skepticism about how things are being set up, how long things are taking. And I think that we've done a lot of groundwork to move things as quickly as possible. And I want to caution people that when you move with urgency and rather than intention, you're going to fall back on status quo, because that's what people know. And the status quo is that people who are low income, people who are people of color, women, mothers are kept out of these policy spaces. So I think that it's more important for us to be deliberate and communicate to the public where we're at and why than it is to rush forward to make it seem like we're productive.
Mayor Keith Wilson was also sworn in yesterday, and he expressed optimism for the work ahead.
It's an exciting day for Portland. I think as far as the transformation goes, we're changing 180 degree direction on the city of Portland. I'm excited. We have some incredible leaders in our councilors. We have a great new form of government, and I think we're going to be more nimble, more innovative, and really meet the moment.
The new City Council will have its first official meeting on Thursday, January 2nd, 2025.
Homeless deaths on Multnomah County streets jumped up last year to 456 people. That's according to the annual Domicile Unknown report released today. 456 Multnomah County residents died while experiencing homelessness in 2023. That's a 45% increase from the year before. 282 people died from overdoses, mainly fentanyl and meth, the report says. 26 people died by suicide, 18 died from cancer or heart disease, and 14 from homicide. Extreme heat and extreme cold didn't take any lives this year, but 22 were killed in traffic accidents. The life expectancy for someone living on the streets in Multnomah County is much shorter than that for folks living indoors. A disproportionate number of people who died were Black or American Indian Alaska Native. Both groups are overrepresented in the population of people experiencing homelessness compared to the general county population. A day of remembrance will be held for those who died this last year on Saturday from 4:30 to 7 p.m. at the Ground Score Association at 624 Northwest Cooch.
In breaking news, and with just hours to go before a government shutdown, the U.S. House approved Speaker Mike Johnson's plan, which would temporarily fund federal operations and disaster aid. It does drop, or at least delay, President-elect Donald Trump's demands for a debt limit increase. The new bill funds the government at current levels through March and provides $100 billion in disaster aid and $10 billion in agricultural assistance to farmers. A government shutdown now seems unlikely. The bill heads to the Senate, where it must be voted on, though, before the midnight deadline. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he hopes the bill will pass, quote, as soon as possible, end quote.
Pacific Power customers will see their rates go up 8.5% next year. The Oregon Public Utility Commission approved the rate increase on Thursday. Previously, Pacific Power had requested a rate hike of more than 17%. They say the driving factor in the increasingly frequent rate hikes is capital investments the power company needs to make, including to better prepare for wildfires. Pacific Power serves over 200 communities in Oregon, Washington, and Northern California. For the average customer, that's an increase of $14 per month. Portland General Electric customers will see a 5.5% increase for residential customers next year. PG customers have seen their utility bills increase by 40% since 2021.
President-elect Trump repeats his threats to jail January 6th committee members while also putting the previous stopgap spending plan in jeopardy. A court removes Fannie Willis from Trump's Georgia election interference case. The FAA restricts drones in New Jersey, and a Federal Reserve cut rate shakes markets. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And Cheney was behind it. So was Benny Thompson and everybody on that committee for what they did. Honestly, they should go to jail.
President-elect Donald Trump is repeating to NBC that he wants the January 6th committee members investigated. He's suggesting that his new FBI director and attorney general will look into the actions of former Wyoming Republican Liz Cheney and the committee's chair, Mississippi Democrat Benny Thompson. Democratic Representative Debbie Dingell of Michigan says committee members were simply doing their jobs, although President Joe Biden is reportedly considering preemptive pardons for them. Dingell says that would undermine the work.
People are talking about, well, should Biden give them a blanket pardon? But a lot of people don't want that to happen.
The House is scrambling to avoid a government shutdown after Trump added a last-minute demand for a two-year debt limit suspension to a funding deal negotiated by congressional leaders. A continuing resolution failed Thursday evening, with big parts of both parties unhappy about a rushed and secretive process. South Carolina Republican Ralph Norman is a deficit hawk.
And guess what was hidden in there? And I'm still livid about this. Pay raises for us. How does that square? What return on investment have we given the people of America other than $37 trillion in debt?
Democrats are criticizing Trump, who they say is under the influence of billionaire Elon Musk. They say the president-elect blew up the deal and suddenly set out the major goal of getting rid of the debt limit entirely. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says the debate seems settled.
We are prepared to move forward with the bipartisan agreement that we thought was negotiated in good faith with House Republicans.
A state court is removing Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis from Trump's Georgia election interference case, citing her affair with a special prosecutor she also hired. Willis says she'll appeal. New Jersey lawmakers want investigations into drone activity after sightings in 24 communities. While federal agencies say they have found no security threats, the FAA has banned drones there through mid-January. Republican Congressman Jeff Van Drew says he doesn't trust what he's hearing from the feds.
We must take these drones out of the sky so we can finally get some answers in who is flying them and why they're flying them.
Financial markets took a hit after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a quarter point and reduced its projections for further rate cuts next year. The Dow fell over 2% Wednesday before rebounding slightly Thursday. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says he's optimistic in spite of the unpredictability.
When you're projecting the economy, you know, 3 years out, 2 years out, you're talking about high uncertainty. While we've made progress, it has been slower than we had hoped. Nonetheless, we're still on track.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
Oregon's housing shortage impacts farm workers in a big way. Oregon has more than 66,000 farm worker households, and most do not have access to affordable housing. One nonprofit is working to change that by creating affordable and energy-efficient homes. Isabel Charlet reports.
Construction will begin early next year on new affordable housing dedicated to low-income Oregon farm workers. This project is the latest by the Farmworker Housing Development Corporation, a nonprofit that is partnering with Energy Trust of Oregon to make their housing more energy efficient. This year, the FHDC hosted workshops teaching more than 200 families how to save energy at home. Ramon Martinez with the corporation says the payoffs are significant, along with receiving more than $20,000 in incentives to help reduce energy use across their properties. He says residents' bills are down.
During the cold months, some people are afraid to turn on the heater, right? But it's been great because I've heard successful stories about residents seeing $200, $300 bills, lowering it down to the $100 range.
Research shows that most farm workers in Oregon do not have access to affordable housing and often live in overcrowded conditions. In Oregon and Washington, 32% of farm worker households live in poverty, which is more than twice as much as the general U.S. population. The Farm Worker Housing Development Corporation manages 460 units across the central Willamette Valley, providing affordable housing to more than 2,000 people. Along with rental housing, it also helps farm workers who are interested in becoming homeowners. Christian Menez Zurita with the corporation says it has hosted homebuyer resource fairs and recently started a fund to help farm workers find housing and pay for education.
Our affordable housing options can be a stepping stone.
Menez Zurita says more information about the Ramon Ramirez Fund can be found at its website, fhdc.org. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin with Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 44 degrees. Late night showers will continue well into tomorrow, with rain expected all day. The high will be 55. Today in history, in 1989, the United States launched its invasion of Panama, deposing de facto dictator Manuel Noriega. Noriega, a drug trafficker and longtime CIA asset, wore out his welcome with the U.S. government when he appeared to switch his Cold War allegiance by accepting military aid from Cuba. The quote of the day is from Oliver Ollie North, who, describing a 1986 conversation with one of Noriega's emissaries, wrote, "Over the years, Manuel Noriega and I have developed a fairly good relationship. In exchange for a promise from us to help clean up his image, he would take care of the Sandinista leadership for us." Ho!
Oregon and three other states now allow federal insurance programs to cover native healing practices. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Four states now allow government-run insurance programs to cover Native American healing practices. In October, the Biden administration expanded both Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program for practices including sweat lodges and drumming in Oregon, California, New Mexico, and Arizona. Jan Proctor Andrews is vice chair for the Coquille Tribe based in coastal Oregon and is a member of the Portland Area Indian Health Board. She says this is a fantastic development which will address issues specific to Native communities.
Native women die from pregnancy-related causes at twice the rate of white women, and Native infants die in their first year of life at nearly twice the rate of white infants. And our populations experience higher levels of other health issues like chronic liver disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, unintentional injuries, and the list could go on. But the expected result is better quality health and health outcomes in tribal communities. really by improving access to culturally appropriate health care.
The expansion for Medicaid and CHIP is on a pilot basis. It's set to expire at the end of September 2027, unless extended. Andrews is hopeful that it will continue.
Our indigeneity is unique because it encompasses the past and present treatment of indigenous peoples and includes the connection between health outcomes and the environment in which we live. Indigenous peoples' environment, the deep-rooted cultural beliefs, and other components that are not usually found in our current, frankly, colonial approaches to healthcare.
The Colquell tribe operates several health clinics, including one in Eugene, Oregon, well beyond its traditional territory. After 3 years and dozens of hearings, a former Juneau, Alaska chiropractor who targeted primarily Native women will go to trial. Jeffrey Foltz is charged with sexually assaulting more than a dozen patients who receive medical care at a tribal health organization that serves Southeast Alaska. At a recent hearing, Assistant District Attorney Jessalyn Gillum said that the repeated delays in the case have taken a big toll on the alleged victims.
The idea of just sort of delaying for delay's sake does sometimes have an adverse effect on witnesses' willingness to participate. They get tired, they get fed up.
Police initially arrested Foltz in 2021 on 3 charges of sexual assault. More women have since come forward, 14 in all. Some of the alleged crimes date back more than a decade. The charges against Foltz are based on accusations that he assaulted patients who sought chiropractic care while he worked for Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. Since Foltz posted bail 3 years ago, he has been living in Colorado. His attorney, James Christie, took on the case last January. Christie argued at each hearing that his team hasn't had enough time to review the case.
I understand that everyone on the line has rights here, and my client's constitutional right to a fair trial trump all of them.
Despite those objections, the judge has blocked out 5 weeks for a trial starting in February. Christie had also requested that the witnesses calling into court to testify be publicly identified. Another motion he filed asked for broader access to their medical records. The judge denied both requests. And on this day in 1812, Sacagawea is said to have died. A Shoshone woman captured by the Hidatsa as a child, Sacagawea is often portrayed as being an interpreter and occasional guide for the Lewis and Clark expedition, which began in 1804. She accompanied the explorers while also carrying her infant son, Jean Baptiste, who was born a year into the so-called Corps of Discovery. She's commemorated in a dollar coin issued by the U.S. Mint and is the namesake for many schools. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
Tesla is recalling almost 700,000 vehicles because of a problem with the warning light on the tire pressure monitoring system. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration just sent out a letter stating the recall includes certain 2024 Cybertrucks, 2017 to 2025 Model 3s, and 2020 to 2025 Model Y vehicles. Apparently, the tire pressure monitoring system warning light on the vehicles may not remain illuminated when the vehicles are turned off or are put to sleep between drive cycles, which means the driver is not rewarned about potential low tire pressure. Driving with improperly inflated tires can increase the risk of an accident. Tesla has been dealing with many recalls recently. The Cybertruck was initially delivered to customers in November of 2023, 2 years behind the original schedule. Now that Cybertruck is up to its 7th recall of the year, with one just last month involving some 2,400 vehicles. In July, the automaker recalled more than 1.8 million vehicles because of a hood issue that could also increase the risk of a crash. In February, Tesla recalled almost 2.2 million vehicles because some warning lights on the instrument panel were too small. The automaker said it's providing a free software update to fix the current problem. Owner notification letters are expected to be mailed on February 15, 2025.
At least 2 people were killed and 68 injured in a vehicle ramming today at a Christmas market in the German city of Magdeburg. A 50-year-old man was arrested at the scene and is suspected of driving a black BMW through a traffic barrier and speeding through the crowd for about 400 meters before coming to a stop. A witness, who is also a reporter for a local newspaper, said that the car targeted a part of the market that was decorated with scenes from fairy tales and full of families with children. The man arrested is a 50-year-old refugee from Saudi Arabia who had been living in Germany since 2006. German authorities described him as a doctor who worked as a consultant in psychiatry and psychotherapy with no known connection to Islamist groups or ideology. Christmas markets are a common holiday event in German cities and towns. Today's attack mirrors a similar attack at the Berlin Christmas market in 2016, which killed 13 people.
Cooling systems at most supermarkets rely on climate-warming HFCs. Alternative systems exist, but there's a shortage of workers trained to install and service them. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. At supermarkets, fridges, freezers, and cooling cases connected by miles of piping help keep food fresh. Skilled technicians keep those systems running smoothly. And those workers can play a critical role in helping supermarkets reduce their climate impact.
Refrigeration has been identified as one of the leading global opportunities to address climate change and reduce emissions.
Morgan Vanzo of the North American Sustainable Refrigeration Council says most fridges and freezers use refrigerants called HFCs. They're potent global warming gases. There are alternatives to HFCs that are better for the climate. But she says to make the switch, a store must replace its entire system.
And it requires a robust workforce that's ready to not only install these systems, but service them.
She says refrigeration technicians are already in high demand, and there are few who are trained in these more sustainable technologies. So her group works with community colleges and trade schools to help recruit more people into the field, and offers workshops and trainings to prepare technicians to work with less polluting systems, so they can help supermarkets transition to a climate-friendly future. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The holiday season can feel lonely for some seniors, but one expert offers ways to identify and combat feelings of loneliness and isolation. Zamon Perez has more.
With Christmas less than a week away, experts are giving advice on how seniors and the community can fight against social isolation. One study by AARP finds more than 30% of seniors have felt lonely over the past 5 years during the holidays. Psychologist Lois Mazares with Maryland AARP says that there are common signs that warn family, friends, or seniors themselves that they may be experiencing isolation. One of those, she says, is shrinking social circles.
They're complaining of their world shrinking. They're no longer working, so they're not doing things with coworkers. Friends have moved away to warmer climates or to be closer to grandchildren.
Mazares says other signs of loneliness include a lack of interest in previously loved activities and unexplainable physical ailments. That could mean seniors complaining of a sore arm or leg, despite doctors not being able to find anything wrong. For anyone who might acutely feel the loneliness of the holidays, Mazares says there are ways to fight isolation. She suggests reaching out to family members and friends on the phone, or going for walks in the neighborhood. Even if they don't feel like accepting an invitation, Mazares says they should go. Look for events at churches, senior centers, and libraries. But some older adults also don't seek out help. For family members, friends, and neighbors concerned about a senior in their life, Mazares says there are a number of ways to help them.
Providing transportation, providing help with technology. I see these as things that are really needed.
She adds that it's helpful for older adults to have technology and learn how to use it to keep feeling connected with others. I'm Simone Perez, Maryland News Connection.
Now it's time for the Point Puzzle, created by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. The Point Puzzle is a weekly radio brain teaser. This week, the theme is the winter solstice and sunlight.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to start with a word for something that you hate. Remove two A's, and you will have a word for something that expresses praise. Well, the answer is anathema. Remove the A's, and you have anthem. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon. We've got the solstice coming up, so for the return of the sun, start with sunlight. replace one of the letters with an E and S, and rearrange the letters to get two things you might have when solving a puzzle. So again, start with the word sunlight, replace one letter with an E and an S, and rearrange the letters to get two things you might have when solving a puzzle. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got some.
This has been Pearl Stark with your point puzzle for the week of December 16th. The point puzzle is produced at KPOV. High Desert Community Radio.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Sam Bauman, and Jasmine Moss. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineers are Jasmine Moss and Sam Bowman. Special thanks to Brian Bull, Farah Siddiqui, Point Puzzle producing Pearl Stark, Isabel Charlet, Simone Perez, and of course, the ineffable Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin, and have a great weekend.